Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Reenie. Welcome to Reenie's Heart to Heart, and I hope you had a very nice, relaxing by the beach or in your backyard with a barbecue and friends and family all together for our Memorial Day. I wanted to talk tonight a little bit about Memorial Day and the difference between it and Veterans Day. They do seem to be awfully close in what they stand for. They're both about our protectors, our soldiers, the people that leave the safety of their homes and their family and go out there and make sure the rest of us can hear freedom ring. And I think the difference is, though of course Memorial Day is an observation of the ones that we've lost. It's a recognition of the men and women that at one point in time put themselves out there and learned how to be protectors in a much more dangerous atmosphere than those of us here in the United States have ever really come to know. Although 9-1-1 was certainly horrific enough for all of us, we've never been a war zone in the full meaning of the word. So I think that Memorial Day is to think back and remember. There was a time way, way back when children, young boys, went to fight in wars and lost their lives many times. And there was a time when women could only be givers of first aid, nurses, housekeeping, cooks, things like that. And of course, that has changed also through the years. Now there are many women in upper echelons in our different, the Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force. There's a lot of women that hold very prestigious seats in those parts of our military services. But I think one of the things that I thought we should straighten out a little bit was the difference, first of all. Memorial Day, as I said, is an opportunity to honor and remember the men and women that have gone out there and fought for our freedom and lost their lives. And as much as it is a sad day, it's also a celebration of those people who were courageous enough and strong enough to go out there and fight for us. And I think it's incredibly important to never, ever forget when you have somebody who sticks up for you, whether it's on a scale of a war zone or on the scale of a friend. Somebody who's willing to fight for you is an awesome, awesome person. Somebody that's willing to leave the safety zones that they've created for themselves with their families and their friends and their workplace and go to strange lands and, I don't know, participate in a lifestyle that has to be so much different from what we're accustomed to in our safe zone. I've seen many pictures through the years, and I've had many family members and good friends. Because of my age, the Vietnam War, of course, was one of the most awful. And I had many friends that came home with internal scars that they still possess. I heard stories that made me feel awful, made me feel sad. and made me realize that these people are very important and get very, very little recognition, if the truth be told. I've also heard stories of World War II, because my dad was in the Navy. And my dad told me things that would hurt my feelings, stories of children walking up and soldiers not being afraid, and the children would get close enough and they would blow up because they had bombs attached to them. The first time my father ever told me a story like that, I thought he was telling me a story to scare me, so I never wanted to go into the service. And, of course, as I grew older, I realized that it was a true story, and that things like that really did happen in World War II. And it was not unusual for an entire village to be destroyed, children, women, and all the men that were fighting, and many of those men were still boys. So again, it's a special day. It's a special day that's filled with some sadness and probably a little remorse for a few people. But it's also a day that we should celebrate, because amongst us walk these people that are willing to do these things to make sure that we're safe in our own homeland. So for that, we all need to give thanks and recognize the fact that they still walk amongst us, these people that are brave and care enough about everyone else to go out there and, as I said, change their entire identity in some cases, become people that they didn't even know that they could become. Now, Veterans Day is an honoring of all armed forces. Obviously, there would certainly be honor amongst the fallen soldiers, but it's also an opportunity to celebrate the fact that many of them came home, and many of them came home with challenges. Many of them came home with injuries. Many of them came home to nobody, hence the ever-famous Dear John letters. So it changed things for them. So Veterans Day is that opportunity to support and recognize and give thanks to all the veterans. And, of course, in today's world, a veteran isn't necessarily a man. A veteran can be either gender, a man or a woman. And if they're 21 years old, that's pretty young woman and that's pretty young man. So I give thanks for that as well. However, one of the bad things about any kind of wartime or war zone, when we talk about things like Vietnam, not a lot of survivors anymore from World War II, although I know there are some, but there's not a big majority of them. But all of the wars that took place, like between 15 and 25 years ago, all of our Mideast wars and things like that, there's a lot of those folks that are home now or maybe still in some kind of active duty, who also faced many hardships and had to change their lives to a pretty big degree. But like I said, Vietnam for me, because so many people were my friends, so many guys, I didn't know one female, which I thought was an interesting personal fact. I didn't know one female that was in any way, shape, or form involved in the Vietnam War. Unless I want to count Hanoi Jane, of course, but I didn't know her personally. But, I mean, you knew that there were nurses, and by that time, there were certainly some female soldiers, but there's never been a lot of recognition for the women that did anything during that war. And then there's the stories of who is still eligible to go to war. And I've always heard all kinds of rumors in regard to that. Like, one of my favorite stories was told to me by a lady that was in hospice care. She was 93, and I am a volunteer for hospice, and I would go sit with her once a week, her and her husband. And she told me stories about her husband having to go to war, and that when you had a family member in the war, they put a star in the window of your home. That just seemed like such a beautiful thing to do. I wondered why we stopped doing that. I see out here in the acreage, every now and then I come across a house that has a flag and it says, "Our son is fighting for our freedom," which, you know, I think is a beautiful thing. If anybody knows why we stopped doing that, I'd like to have a call and explain to me why we quit and if there's a reason why that couldn't be again, because I think that's something to be proud of. But the other thing is, I'd always been told that if you sent your son to war or your husband went to war and you lost him, then the sole heir of your name, who would be the son that you have left, if you only have one son, he would be exempt from signing up for the draft or for going to a war zone. And I think I've been told that for a very, very long time. So today, I researched that. And it is something that was attempted. 1948, they made the sole surviving son after World War II exempt. And then in 1964, recognizing the fact that the children of the World War II vets were coming of age for draft. So they made another revision of the law to include the sole surviving son could be exempt if the father or any other siblings were lost. But they added a very important clause, and that clause was this was only valid during peacetime, not during wartime. Then in 1971, the law changed again to include any son, whether it was your last surviving son, or if you had three sons and one of your family members were lost in a war or in a fighting zone, then again the restriction was that was only true in peacetime. So in other words, if we are all called to war, there was no one who was exempt, regardless of what had taken place in previous war times or war zones, no matter how many people were left. And now, 1971, they also changed that to include moms, because so many moms went to war. So that straightens that out for all of us, and I was kind of interested when I read that because, like I said, we just talked about this recently, myself and some family members, about families that we know that lost children, and they have other children, and if there was a war, which of course we pray every day that there will not be any more fighting amongst any of us, but I wondered if that was still true. So now we know the actual way that's written, peacetime only. So then that brought me to the repercussions after a veteran comes home. And in my tenure at Hippocrates Health Institute, I met a lot of veterans, thanks to the help of a gentleman by the name of Bill Raper, who became a very good friend. And he has kind of dedicated the last few years of his life to helping a lot of the men and women that are placed in Veterans Administration hospitals who are suffering from PTSD, which, you know, is post-traumatic stress disorder. And the definition of PTSD is a disorder that is triggered by a terrifying event. So, and the statistics that I looked up are crazy. I mean, I can't even read them to you because every time I've tried to read them over and over again, they make less and less sense. But the gist of it is they can't really do good statistics because so many people suffer with PTSD and just live with it. Don't see anyone, don't try to help themselves, because really what happens is because they get so far down into the war zone depths that they can't lift themselves out. And unless they have someone close to them who realizes what's going on with them, it can be misconstrued as many other problems, such as alcoholism and drug use and, habitual, poor behavior, I guess. So the statistics, admittedly, that I read, I mean, by their admittance, are probably not true. But what it does state is there's a big suicide statistic as well. And the National Vietnam Veterans Readjustment Study was commissioned by the government in the 80s and found that Vietnam theater veterans, I guess that means the men that are right on the fighting lines, 15% of those men had PTSD at the time of the study, and 30% of them had PTSD at some point in their life. But in 2003, they did a reanalysis and said that contrary to the initial analysis of the National Vietnam Veterans Readjustment Study, say that three times fast, please, a large majority of Vietnam veterans struggled with chronic PTSD symptoms, with 4 out of 5 of them reporting recent symptoms when interviewed 20 to 25 years after the Vietnam War. Now, if you're talking about severe imbalance in somebody's connectivity with what's right and what's wrong and how they're supposed to handle themselves, many names for all of those kinds of disorders that I find to be too labeling, so I'm not going to use them. But I do believe that some of the things that I just spoke about, drug use and alcoholism and abusive behaviors and everything, all coincide with this, this whole feeling of, oh my God, what did I get myself into? And now I've got to stay here and make sure I don't get killed and make sure the man standing next to me is safe. Can you imagine that responsibility and how that would affect some of us, not all of us, but some of us are purely and simply not programmed to be able to fight in a war. So as I look through the rest of the statistics, as I said, they go from 9% all the way up to like the 70s and the 80s, depending on where they go, when they go, all that kind of stuff. So I'm not going to read them because I find them to be, kind of bogus. So, but I do think that it's a real and true thing, this PTSD, and I do think that the same thing happens to some of the people we've talked about on our show. For instance, some of our young girls who continually do damage to their own bodies because of things that have happened to them. I don't know what will occur with the three ladies that got rescued in Cleveland, but certainly they will suffer from a disorder either called this or called something else, but in ultimately it's the same thing. A traumatic event has probably changed them forever. And bullying, the fact that so many young people get picked on for day after day, week after week, month after month, it's the same thing. So even though, as I mentioned before, there's no war zone here in the United States of America, not a bona fide war zone, we are in our own war zone. And that's one of hatred and prejudice and jealousy and judgmental behavior. And that's one of the things that I'm hoping that we can make a difference with when we talk about things like this. Because it isn't supposed to be a war zone. And the reason these men that we are remembering today and the women that we are remembering today went to keep us safe was so that we could all live in some kind of peaceful harmony. And if we don't remember that some of them lost their lives to put us in that place, to keep us in that safe zone, because we're not behaving in a fashion that creates that peaceful, safe zone, then we should be ashamed of ourselves. And we really need to think about what it is we're trying to accomplish here. This is supposed to be a place, look around you. There's a blue sky with fluffy white clouds. Who thought that up? That's gorgeous, gorgeous. And if you look out over the ocean at night, when the moon comes up over here on our coast, when the moon comes up, it looks like a blazy island. It looks like there's a giant fireball coming out of the ocean. And this big blue ocean with more life underneath the water. Who thought that up? We have a haven. But we taint it with our behavior, our thoughts, and our deeds. And we have to do something about keeping ourselves and the people we love in a much more harmonious place because of all the people before us and after us that fight to maintain that. So I want you to remember that when you're thinking about what you're grateful for today and who you're remembering today. Many of you I know because I hear from a lot of you privately. Many of you have grandpas, dads that you lost in different altercations in other lands. And you're mourning the loss of them. Well, let's don't mourn about it. Let's celebrate the fact that we still have those kind of people that are still willing to go out there and make sure that we're safe. But it won't do us any good if they're fighting for our safety and we're messing up the house when they're gone. You see, we have to take care of this. That's our job. Our job is to maintain some kind of peaceful and loving and caring atmosphere to live in. For us, for our children, for our children's children. So, otherwise, we're going to be in a place where that war zone I was talking about might be in our own front yard. And I don't think any of us want that. None of us. So, I'm going to bring in Miss Shelley, who's probably bored with hearing me talk. Hi, Miss Shelley.
Hi, Irene.
How are you tonight? She must have driven right through where I always lose her. Well, let me share something with you while she's getting back with me. She is going to read something tonight that she found that we think is really appropriate after everything that I've been talking about tonight. She's going to read something that she found that kind of coincides with this. And I'm going to let her tell you about it, and then we're going to read it, and then we'll have a little bit more discussion. Want to tell everybody what this is, Shell?
Hey, Rain. Sorry, but I'm having issues with my phone tonight, so you may lose me a couple more times. I uploaded an update, and now it's just, like, totally messed my phone up.
Well, did I lose you again?
Huh?
Oh, I thought I lost you again. Okay, read what you announce what you're going to read and read it to everybody before we do lose you.
Okay, all right. One of the things that had impressed me, and then you've spoken about this before, is the fact that people are so critical of people who are out in the news that are trying to do things, and they may fumble and they may make mistakes, but they're out there doing it. And then you have people from the safety of their armchairs sitting there and criticizing these people that are out there trying to accomplish things. And if they stumble or they make a mistake, you know what, they'll rally, they'll figure it out. But instead of being critical, you should be supportive and say, look, instead of doing it this way, why don't you try that way? You know, like constructive criticism from the point of being helpful, but not criticism from the point of saying, well, you don't know what you're doing, why do you even have that job? You know, and Teddy Roosevelt had, there's this very famous quote by Teddy Roosevelt where he basically takes the person who makes the criticisms and puts them in proper perspective and takes the person who's out there actually trying to accomplish something and puts them in a more realistic light. And that's basically what this quote is about. So well, let me go ahead and read it. All right, and then we can discuss it, because I think it's very powerful, all right, if you really think about what he's saying here, okay? So the quote reads as follows. It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out where the strong man stumbled or the doer of deeds could have done better. No, the credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred with dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, errs and comes up short again and again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who at best knows the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, at least he fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never ever be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. So it's very powerful, and basically what he's saying here is that the credit goes to the people who are out there, whether they fail or not, whether they make mistakes or not, they're out there trying to make a difference. And if they fail again and again and again, eventually they'll know triumph, eventually they'll know achievement, because they keep themselves out there regardless of public criticism, despite ridicule. They're out there and they just keep out there, you know, plodding along. And if they fall down 20 times, they get up 21 times, and eventually they are going to make a difference, you know. But for the person who from the safety of their home sits there and criticizes, they're never going to know any of these failures, but they're also never going to know any successes, because they're not even putting themselves on the front line.
Well, you know me. I agree with that 110%, and I get very upset, even on my Facebook page, when I hear some people that I really love, that I care about, and that I know are good people, and they say things, and I want to say, what are you talking about? How the hell do you know what's going on there? And how can you say anything? Well, you're sitting, like you say, you know, armchair politicians, armchair judges. And I guess we're doing a little bit of that on this radio show, so I don't want to sound like a hypocrite, but I'm trying to let everybody see what other people see already, but I don't do it on an individual basis. I don't say,
I don't think that is what we're doing on this radio show, because we're not attacking the people that are trying to make a difference and maybe make a mistake or error something. The people that you and I talk about doing better are the people that are in positions of responsibility and are blatantly disregarding the responsibility and the expectation that people have in them for the particular job position they have. So that's not really the same thing. We're not talking about somebody who's trying to make a difference and maybe is going about it the wrong way, but obviously their intent is to help. You and I talk about the people who are in positions of responsibility and don't take it seriously and don't rise to the occasion of the particular position they have. You know, somebody that's supposed to be looking out for a child and choose not to for political reasons. They, you know, that's not somebody trying to make a difference. That's somebody who's trying to protect their position. And when you do that at the expense of somebody that you're supposed to be protecting, that's unconscionable. So that's the type of person you and I talk about on this show. We're not talking about the people that are trying to make a difference and maybe stumbling and making a mistake.
Well, I hope everybody sees it that way, because you're right, that's our intent. I'm just trying to say that, well, I'm very sensitive to some of the things that I say. And when I say that I don't like to hear people badmouthing everybody, then, you know, if I'm going to talk the talk, I got to walk the walk. So I want to make sure that everybody understands that when we do talk about some of the poor behavior that they see, that we see in front of us, and we see in all the things that I bring up on the internet and all the stuff we discuss, it is an opportunity to let people see through another pair of eyes and to understand a little bit about what is really happening, so they don't keep making the same mistakes. Because let's face it, mistakes are made by every one of us every day, sometimes many times a day. So I do believe that's like the person who doesn't vote because they think their vote won't count, or the person who knows that the little girl next door is being abused in some way, shape, or form, and they think they're just going to get in trouble if they call, or they're going to get somebody upset, or they might be making a mistake. Or I'm trying to wake up those people so that instead of just sitting on the phone and talking to the next-door neighbor about what they surmise might be going on next door, I'd like them to make a phone call that's going to make a difference. And if you are wrong, well, I'm sorry. But I was worried, and I thought I would be making a very serious mistake if I didn't bring this to someone's attention. And again, you know, I'm not for whistleblowing. I'm not for mass audiences going in and jumping all over somebody before they have facts. I don't believe in that either. But there is a nice, happy medium about empathy and caring enough to find out what's going on and making sure that if you're a grown-up, when you're supposed to step up to the plate, you're not sitting over in a coffee booth someplace and ignoring the plate. That's all I want to say.
Whistleblowing is a brave thing to do, providing that you have accurate facts. You know, some people go into whistleblowing on hearsay or on rumors or on gossip. But if you're somebody who's privy to information that somebody above you at a job or is doing something that's illegal or harmful to the staff or harmful to other people, and you're brave enough to get this out in a public arena so that it can be stopped, that's actually a very brave thing to do. But not as a result of just, like I said, hearsay and gossip. You have to know what you're saying, because you could be ruining people's lives. Now, if you're ruining if you're harming somebody who's harming somebody else, well then they shouldn't be doing that to begin with, you know. So that's why I'm saying it can be a brave thing if it's done for the right reason. And it can be a brave thing if it's done with integrity and you know that what you're saying is truthful and that you have the proof and that kind of thing. So there's actually there's two different things with whistleblowers, and there's actually two different categories of whistleblowers.
Well, and I agree with that. And I think one of our shows, we covered this pretty much at length in regard to getting the rest of the story.
Exactly. And that comes down to personal responsibility, and all, you know, it kind of wraps up everything else that we were talking about. You know, it's funny, you know, we talk about personal responsibility and acting appropriately in situations, and you know, I'm going to mention something real quick that happened this weekend, just because it's a symptom, okay, of the inappropriateness of how adults act today. You know, we want our younger generation to act in a way that's appropriate and that's healthy for them and healthy for the people they interact with. And my sister had a garage sale this weekend, and some of the people that showed up got there, you know, grabbed a handful of stuff. And this happened twice. So it was just like two different groups of people. brought up a bunch of stuff, and my sister said, well, you know, this is how much she wanted for it. And they said, well, that's too much, you know. And my niece was there, and she said, well, you've got like 100. She said, in that bag, there's over 150 baby clothes. The woman wanted to give them like a buck for it. And I forgot what they asked for, but it was reasonable. It was all brand new baby stuff, you know. And my niece was asking a certain amount of money. Well, the woman got annoyed because of what they were asking, took the entire handful of stuff she had, threw it at them, and walked off the property. So here they are. Now all this baby clothes that was folded and clean is now all over the floor. And that happened an hour later. A different group of people came, didn't get the price they wanted, and instead of just saying, well, that's more than I wanted to spend, I'm not going to take it, and setting it down, they threw it. They threw it across the yard. And that's just, you know, two different groups of adults coming there. And, you know, if you don't get your way about something, isn't that like that's what a five-year-old would do. That's not what an adult should do. If you don't get your way, so what? Be an adult. Be a decent human being and just agree to disagree, you know? But I find that embarrassing that an adult would act that way. I find it completely inappropriate that just because they didn't get their way, they have to act out. That's something you would expect from a five-year-old, not from a 35-year-old, and not from a group of adults, you know? And it's just a symptom of where our society is, that people have such a level of entitlement, and that's where a lot of the inappropriate and bullying behavior comes from, because people have a sense of entitlement over stuff. You know, why did they have to get any particular price? This is the price that my sister and my niece wanted. If they didn't want to pay it, then guess what? Go to another garage sale, you know? Mm-hmm. But it was completely inappropriate. And I, like I said, it's a symptom of the mindset of a lot of society today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, it's about everything that we talk about common decency and manners and all of the things that go with that. You know, when I spend time with AJ, he has a new friend who comes over and plays, and they get along beautifully. And she's 8, AJ is 6, and they've made quite a nice little friendship between the two of them. And the other day, they call each other on the phone, and the other day she called the house, and I answered the phone, and I said, hi, honey, and she said, hi, and I said, I don't imagine you want to speak to me. You probably called to talk to Adam. That's what she calls him, because that's what they call him in school. She said, actually, Grandma Rini, I'm happy to talk to whoever answers the phone.
Aww.
And my mouth down to my chest, right? And I went, honey, that is sweet of you to say that to me. And she said, how are you? I said, I'm good. How are you? I said, are you coming over today? And she said, is it okay with you? And I said, yes, it is. Now, this is an 8-year-old little girl. This is an 8-year-old little girl. Already she's expressed more manners and more good behavior than most of the young adults that call here.
My goodness, that's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Oh, I do think that, you know, of course I'm a Pollyanna when it comes to some things. I know our good friend Izzy has picked on me a little bit about this, and he says to me, you're never going to get everybody do this. And I'm like, I'm not going to say that. I'm not. Because I believe that everybody needs to. And like you just said a few minutes ago, if you're going to sit, like, and what do I say about doing this show? If I was going to bitch about it, I better do something about it. That's why I do this show.
That's right. That's right.
This is not making me rich. This is not changing my lifestyle. I do this because I think somebody has to talk about the things that are going on instead of pretending like it's none of their business. And this today, a Memorial Day, when we're supposed to remember all of our fallen brothers and sisters and fathers and mothers who have lost their lives because they were brave enough and courageous enough to go out there and keep our homeland safe, it's about them like it is anybody else who's ever done anything for you. If they cared enough to fight for us to keep us safe, we at least ought to keep it clean.
Right. Right. And the whole thing is they were fighting for a country that would be safe for people to pursue their personal happiness. And look what's happening within the borders of the United States. People are making it unsafe for other people. People are making it unhappy for other people just because they're different in some way. I mean, so here you have these men and women now going, sacrificing in many cases their life, certainly sacrificing years of their life in service and sometimes losing their lives, to fight for our freedom, and then within our own borders, we are taking freedoms away from other people. I mean, that should be something that should be intolerable from just a standpoint of simple morality. And like you said before, just common decency of treating people, you know?
Well, I do think that that's one of the most important things that we have to work on, and that is respect and decency and having the mindset that some things are not your right, some things are your responsibility, but some things are not your right. And I think there seems to be difficulty in understanding the difference between the two. One is something that you should be involved in because it's your responsibility, no one else's. The other one is your right because your morals and the way you believe or the way you should believe make it your right. But then there's the other things that enter in, like your judgmentality or your jealousy or all the other things that make you make poor decisions, and then it's not your right, it's not your responsibility, it's none of your business. And if you don't love everybody, that's certainly forgivable. And I'm not Pollyanna enough to believe that that would ever happen. But you still should regard everybody with a common amount of decency and respect and let people, you know, live their own lives with some kind of peace and serenity without harassing other people because they don't appear to behave the way you think they should. All
right.
Those things, they have real fine lines between them, Shell. They don't, you know, some of you could say, well, you should speak up, and then you speak up, and the thing you're speaking up about is none of your damn business.
Right.
How somebody does
right.
the doors of their house, and how somebody dresses, or what color somebody's hair is, or the fact that somebody's too thin, or somebody's too heavy, or somebody wants to pierce, you know, both ears, their nose and their chin and anything else, those things are none of your business. None of your business.
Right.
So those things don't fall under any kind of category that tells you, oh, it's your job, it's your responsibility to say something to that kid because he looks ridiculous. No, it's not your job. It's none of your business.
That's right.
So I think people, you know, when you talk about caring and empathy and watching out for your neighbor and everything, you have to have a little bit of common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Some things, you know, some things aren't any of your business. But if you see a child who cries all the time, who jumps when somebody raises their hand, or appears to have any kind of marks on them or anything, that is your business. Not your
right.
business approach the person in question. It's not your business to get involved so that you might hurt yourself or someone else that you care about. But it is your business to report it to somebody. And it is your business if you know somebody's doing something. Here's a good one that just came across my desk the other day. If you know somebody's doing something that could put them in jail at your workplace, and you don't tell anybody who's in charge. You're just as guilty as the person that's doing it.
Right.
And why? Because you're letting it go on and you're not caring enough about where you work or the people that are being hurt by that.
That's right.
If somebody at your job isn't doing the job that you think they should be doing and you're not the boss, you're not the supervisor, what he does, you never set him up to do that job or her up, you don't do that job, you do an entirely different job, what is that? That's
none of
your business. So, you know, I think some of this, you know, we should do a course like this in school. I mean, I talk to my kids about this all the time, and not that they always make the right choices, but we do talk about it. And we do say, you know, there are some things that you should make sure you come home and tell me. Other things aren't any of your business, nor are they any of mine. So that's kind of tricky sometimes, I guess. But it is very true. So, again, in celebration of these people who have fought for us, was your dad in the service, Shelley?
Yeah, he was in the Marines.
Mm-hmm. But he wasn't old enough to be in World War II, and was he young enough to be in Vietnam?
No, he was in, what the heck war was he in? He was born in 1935, and he was in the Marines around 1955 to 57, I guess, somewhere around there. So I'm trying to remember what war was going on at that time. But
I think there was
a war
zone then. I think there was lots of stuff going on at that point in time in places like Russia and stuff where we would send people, but I don't think there was really a war zone. My father was in World War II, and I don't know if you joined me early enough to hear some of the things that I mentioned that my father shared with me about World War II.
Yes.
But my father had scars from it. I can remember my dad, if we watched a documentary about Hitler, and it was the name of the documentary, I will never forget it. I was only 14 years old, and my father told me I should watch it with him, and it was called Remember Us. And it was all about, you know, the deaths of all those people, and they just showed all these bodies, these skeletal bodies being dumped like, you know, like trash, like garbage bags, but there were no bags to be seen, just naked, skinny bodies. Being picked up with like, you know, giant, like steam shovels, not steam shovels, but backhoes, with big backhoes, and dumped into these giant pits. And I remember looking at my father, who was very Irish, by the way, and he'd just be sitting there crying. The tears would just be streaming down his face. And I said, and I was upset too, but I was very young, and it was hard for it. In the beginning, I thought it was a movie. And my father and I thought it was a disgusting movie, and my father said, no, Rini, this is true.
It's
this
a documentary.
Is stuff Hitler did to these people because he believed that these people were not here for a good reason, I think is what he told me, and that Hitler believed that the people that he wanted to be in the world would look like me, my father said to me. They would be fair-haired, blue-eyed, and all this kind of stuff. And I thought to myself, why would he like me any better than he does Barbara? Because my sister Barbara is olive-skinned like my mother's side of the family and has green eyes. So, of course, I worried about Barbara. But my father kind of explained it to me, but he was brokenhearted. And in later years, when we talked about watching that when I was older, he said, all I could think about was the things that I saw when I was in Italy and places like that. And when we would go into war zones in World War II, he said it would be nothing to have a little kid walk up to you, and you'd walk up and think that they'd want a piece of candy. And sometimes we'd get candy from the USO or one of those kind of places. And you'd go to give them candy, and they'd blow up. And he said he watched
Well, I can't even wrap my, you know, it's one thing you talk about a suicide bomb or a grown adult making a, you know, because they have a fanatical passion about something, but making a child, I've never been able to understand it. I have a hard time with war anyway, just because of the atrocities that happen. You know, but when you're defending your borders, that's one thing. But, you know, using children, I can't even find the word to describe that. You know, I was going to say unconscionable, and that's not even extreme enough. You know,
yeah.
But my father was a child during World War II. He actually grew up in Berlin, Germany. As a matter of fact, the house he grew up in is still standing.
Wow!
When I went to Germany recently, I didn't get a chance to go over to Berlin. It was too far from where we flew into to see my nephew. It's like 6 hours by train away from there. It's just too far away. But I do want to go back. But the house he grew up in is still standing. My uncle had found it many years ago. And his father. My family actually worked in the German underground trying to overthrow Hitler. And in 1942, 42 of my relatives were actually executed by the Nazis because they were found to be working to try and overthrow Hitler. And my grandfather wasn't executed, but he was put in a concentration camp for 6 months. The Nazis had had killed my grandmother trying to find my grandfather. And my father and his brother, at 8 and 7 years old, were basically tossed out on the street. And they had to fend for themselves for 6 months. They talk about trauma. So he, you know, I've spoken about my father on the show before, and I have compassion for how his life turned out. I don't have
right.
a relationship with because I couldn't tolerate some of his attitude. But he was an extremely damaged person, you know, so I have compassion for him in that regard. I just don't have a relationship with him because I can't abide by some of his ideals. And but I certainly understand where
you have sympathy for where he's at. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which is what we're asking of everybody. You know,
right.
That's the whole idea, is to try to, you don't need to sympathize with anybody because somebody's problems are of their own making. And
right.
And sometimes we are our own biggest enemy. We know that.
We've met a lot of people that went through similar experiences that my father did, such as my Uncle Steve, who has passed away now. And my Uncle Steve saw the exact same things my father did, was also very young, lived through that horror, and yet he was an absolutely beautiful man, the sweetest man, you know, he had so, you know, like, so that's, I think that's sometimes where my, where, although I felt compassion for my father, I didn't cut him all that slack, because he had choices, he had people that loved him, he had people that cared about him, and he was just mean. And here his brother, who saw the exact same things, turned out to not want to perpetrate all that violence he saw and went the other extreme and became like the sweetest human being you could imagine, seeing the exact same horrors, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's tough. You know, it's tough when you realize these things happen to our soldiers and they see these things. You know, here are two young boys that it happened to and how it affected them. And but the soldiers going there are seeing it from a different perspective, but most of the soldiers are teenagers. You know, they're 18, 19, 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
In many regards, they are very childlike and seeing these horrors, and they're not totally prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
That's where a lot of your PTSD comes from. You know, how
That's
do you prepare
right.
somebody for some of the horrific things that they see and that they're exposed to, you know?
Well, that's some of my friends. I mean, I have one that is still lives in upstate New York, and I saw him right after he got home, and I was shocked. I mean, his whole demeanor was different, and he was one of the smartest kids in school that I knew, and he never did anything else with his life. Nothing. He just
wow.
He became a pretty big drinker, but I wouldn't call him a hopeless alcoholic like some people I've seen, but he couldn't be productive. And he would tell me stories about what he would dream about and things like that, and I would be, you know, can't somebody do something to help you? And I guess there isn't anything. I don't, maybe there is now. This was, gosh, this was 45 years ago. But I think that a lot, you know, I mentioned Bill Raper, who you and I both hold in very high regard and think he's wonderful and everything. And of course, he helps a lot of these veterans at the VA hospital. And he suffers from of the PTSD or PTSD. Why can't I get these right? PTSDs himself. And so yeah. He has a better understanding maybe than you and I do. But in a lot of cases, there just purely and simply isn't anything anybody can do. They just have to kind of make their own way. It's like, you know, swimming
there are things today to deal with PTSD, people, whether it's from war or some violent crime or an accident or something like that. There are more and more holistic psychological treatments out there. There's been so many studies with a lot of the Eastern technologies coming over to the United States finally in dribs and drabs. And there's so much in those fields that can help people recover from post-traumatic stress disorders, block the memories, block how the memories and the nightmares impact them on a daily basis, and help them get some level of normalcy. It's not going to make them forget, but what it does is it helps the brain not engage the memories, because what a lot of these war these men and women who have gone through wars and seen traumatic events is that they keep reliving them over and over and over. They can't disengage from them. It was so traumatic that it almost becomes part of who they are, and they can't disconnect from it. So they come home, and then they can't stay in relationships, because if they hear a loud noise, they think they're back in the war zone, and it just puts their families through all kinds of trauma as well, trying to deal with this person, you know, trying to get back to a normal life, and they can't seem to grasp a normal life again. So I think it would be a good idea. I do have some things. I don't want to put them out on the radio right now, but I do have some things that I can give you to post, that if there are people listening that know someone who's suffering from PTSD, whether it's from wartime or not, because that's not the only thing you suffer
right,
from.
Any kind of horrible trauma through, yes.
Yeah.
Well,
links, and you can put them up on your website.
Okay. I'll be happy to do that. And you know that we have a mutual friend that we've known for quite some time who practices a lot of modalities, thank you. And she's going to help my grandson, Michael. And I'm looking forward to that, and when the time comes that I can tell everybody that things are much better for him, I look forward to that. So, and I do believe a lot of that has to do with our brain and body connectivity, and we've talked about that many, many times. But we're almost out of time, so I want to tell you all, I hope you enjoyed your Memorial weekend. I hope a lot of people had a three-day weekend and enjoyed it with friends and family. And let's remember to not forget. That's the big thing. And let's remember to always hold in our hearts the fact that there are really, really brave people that walk amongst us who keep us safe every day. So, from my heart to yours, everybody, I want to say good night and say good night to my Shelley. Thank you for reading what you read. I thought it was awesome. You know what I'd like to do too is maybe we can scan that and put that on for people to read on the computer, on Facebook or something. So, because a lot of people, you know, they get a lot of help from encouragement like that, because they have it in there,
But it's like turning the faucet on, you know. Sometimes the faucet gets left off in us for too long, and if somebody comes along and flips it back on again, we're good to go, right?
Good. Yeah, I'll get that. I'll scan it over to you. Yep.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you, my darling. I love you, and good night, everybody, and God bless.
Good night, everyone.
Night, Shell.
Good night, Reen.